I saw that the questions with two of you on the egg, on the helicopter in
Thank you, members. We are starting with our meeting. We are held at ransom by the support staff. We are starting with our meeting, and therefore this meeting is now open. Let me welcome all of us to this important session where we will be preparing ourselves as a portfolio committee to interact with the department in as far as the annual report that is before us is concerned. But maybe before I talk about that, let me just mention that we learned with shock the shooting of the innocent people in Gauteng by the police who suspected them to have committed some crime. And I just want to say that as the chairperson of the portfolio committee, but also I think as this portfolio committee, we expect our police officers to observe the law and to respect the rights of innocent citizens. We do expect them to be very careful, not just to decide at any time to shoot or shoot anybody. We have one life and not two, and when you lose that life, you lose it forever. I just want, therefore, on behalf of this portfolio committee, to extend our sympathy to the families that have lost their loved ones. And indeed, we are hoping, as it was indicated this morning on news, that the ICD is going to investigate this case. And if there are people who must be punished, we expect the department to punish them as quickly as possible. Furthermore, I just want to mention again that last week we again buried another police, Captain Carl Skeppes, who also was shot dead by a suspect. We learned this morning, if I'm not mistaken, of a young police with the surname of Ngwenya, if I'm not mistaken, who again was shot by a suspect. I think many more on our newspapers, they appear, probably I'm just mentioning the two because I can remember them. It can't be that we have police who are targets of criminals. And I think as communities, at some stage we have got to talk and say these things without mincing our words that it is wrong. Because it is when we say this today and say that tomorrow, and that the message somewhere gets lost, that sometimes even criminals think that we might be talking on their behalf. I just want to mention that we cannot afford to have our police officers dying and being killed just like that by criminals. Let me again extend our condolences to the families of these officers who, as they protect our society and protect our property, they become victims of criminals. I think people who kill police, but who kill all of us, are criminals. And I think somewhere, as communities, but even ourselves as members of parliament, members of the media, and so on, we have got to draw the line and say, I'm a responsible citizen and not a criminal, and therefore cannot participate on any criminal act, and therefore are able to say those are criminals, so that there isn't any mixing or ambiguity in as far as that is concerned. I do hope that whatever measures that we are going to take, all of us as South Africans in fighting this crime, we will support and we will ensure that criminals do not find space amongst ourselves and in our communities. Sometimes when you open newspapers every day and you learn about crime, you feel like really criminals are given more space everywhere. I wish one day we read on our newspapers issues that are saying we are indeed putting these measures to fight crime. And actually on our front page newspapers, we say, communities, please participate, be with us. So that everybody can realize that the quest and the request for members of communities to participate and to fight together with us crime can be on the front page of any newspaper and can actually make anybody in South Africa to want to buy that newspaper. Because it would seem like now we buy newspapers because on the front page it's about crime. If it is about anything that is constructive, that is saying we've got to fight crime together, people will not buy newspapers. I think people will buy newspapers. And I think that should be the message. We can't give a picture to criminals that says you are winning the war. I should think the message that must go out there to criminals, because they're not many, it must be a message that says we are fighting the war against you. You're not going to win. We are going to win. I'm also saying this because not a single political party during elections did not have the issue regarding crime fighting in its manifesto. And if you check on the number of people that voted, I want to believe that many of them voting for each party were voting because of the things that were there in our manifestos, and one of them being crime fighting. And I think we've got to continue in that line to say, all of us together, different political parties, but as citizens, voters, and so on, we are going to fight crime and we are going to win. We cannot lose that battle, and indeed we are not losing it at all. But having said that, let me again go back to our program for the day. We will allow the research unit to lead us in the presentation.
Chairperson, may I pray for indulgence? It will be proper, Chairperson, because we have started by that statement that we do the same as different parties to support you on the statement, so that you won't be seen as if you are singing your own song and clapping for your own beat. I think it will be proper. Chairperson, but I'm up to the committee if you think it will be right.
In fact, I was not trying to open a debate or a statement session. I think we might have that in the House, but as we probably continue, members will be free to say something on what I've said. But maybe let me again go back to this. We will be led by Mr. Zofa, Honorable Zofa. I take your request, but maybe, yes, I'm worried about time. Let me say that we will be led by our research unit, and the purpose of this preparatory workshop is to sharpen our minds and ourselves as members of parliament so that when we meet with the department next week, we are able to ask questions. We want to interact thoroughly and robustly with the annual report, which will be presented to us by the department. And for us to do that, we decided that we must have a preparatory workshop where in the research unit, but also Treasury, Auditor General will be with us to brief us and give us, you know, and probably assist us in preparing relevant questions to ask the department or from the department next week. In fact, this week on Friday, yes. It is starting this week on Friday with program 1 and 2, yes? Yes, 1 and 2. So this is the purpose of this workshop. We will continue until 1 o'clock, and then, of course, we'll continue with our meeting tomorrow. Let me also remind members that we're meeting Sudanese tomorrow. Yes, that is the meeting tomorrow. It's about Sudanese who are coming to our country, and in fact, they've visited our country and would want to meet this portfolio committee. And yes, that's it. Let me allow the researcher to lead us, then we'll ask questions, Mr. Bisi.
Thank you, Stan. Good morning, members of parliament and fellow colleagues. As the chairperson has said already, we are here to sharpen the portfolio committee on police so that when the department comes, we'll be able to engage with the department on the annual report for 2008-09. I must say that my part of the presentation will focus mainly on the performance of the department, and we will touch briefly on the Auditor General's findings. However, I want to say that we are privileged today to have Treasury, who will be focusing a lot more, I guess, on the findings of the Auditor General and the expenditure pattern of the department in the year under review. This is how our presentation is going to look like this morning. We'll begin with a short introduction. Then we'll focus just a little bit on program administration. Then the bulk of the presentation will be on visible policing, which is the crucial program of the department. And then we'll touch a little bit as well on detective services. And then we'll conclude by looking at the findings of the Auditor General. Briefly, the vision and the mission of the department. The vision is to create a safe and secure environment for all the people in South Africa. And there are three missions. One is to prevent anything that threatens the safety and security of any community, to investigate any crimes that may threaten the safety and security of any community, and also to ensure criminals are brought to justice and participate in efforts to address the root causes of crime. The legislative mandate is there, and the constitutional mandate as well. And the department was functioning guided by a strategic plan spanning between 2005 to 2010. And those are the objectives in the strategic plan: to combat organized crime, combat terrorism, crime, reduce the incidence of crime against women and children, deepen community and sector policing, and reduce contact for crime. In Program 1, Administration, we will not go through the entire program, but we'll just highlight a few things that would be of major concern and that the committee will be interested in, and try to engage with the department in that regard. Firstly, we look at human resources management. The total number of posts that the department had planned for was 183,180. The number of posts that were filled, however, in that year was 182,754. And they fell short by 426, which is negative 0.23%. And the vacancy rate in that year was 8.8 compared to 0.1% that was there in the preceding financial year, which was 2007-08. Maybe in this regard, the committee will be interested in asking as to really the vacancy rate increased somewhat dramatically, and what caused such a sudden increase, and why not all the posts were filled. However, the department also engaged in a rigorous recruitment campaign, and it filled 14,611 posts. Of those posts, 11,034 were entry-level constables, and 3,577 were posts in various divisions and in various levels within the department. We are told that the department began its recruitment strategy in 2007, which sought to ensure that it meets its target and it increases its manpower. However, since the department began implementing its recruitment strategy in 2007, the vacancy rate has increased steadily, as it was 8.8% in 2008-09 compared to 0.1% that was there in the preceding financial year. So it will be interesting to know as to how does the department benefit from this particular strategy if, when it's implemented, the vacancy rate increases instead of decreasing. excuse me. We also have service terminations that occurred in that particular financial year. Service terminations can be a result of death, dismissals, or promotion and transfer, just to name a few. The people who left the department that year or whose service were terminated was 3,310. And in that number, you have all the elements that lead to termination, such as the ones that I've highlighted earlier. The employment equity, 75% to 25%, and the department prides itself in that it is the only law enforcement agency in the world that has 31% female rate, or most numbers of females in the law enforcement agency, as it has 31% female. We also when we're looking at issues of HR recruitment service termination, it will also be important to ask the department as to what measures does it have to ensure staff retention, that people remain within the department, and do what we have to do in fighting the scourge of crime. We also have the cases of misconduct that were reported and disciplinary hearings that took place. There were 3,479 in total cases of misconduct that were looked at in that particular year. And of those, there were 990 cases of corruption reported, and 50% of those were found guilty or had a guilty verdict. The department also in 2007-08 reported that it had begun implementing what is called the Corruption and Fraud Prevention Plan. But it will be interesting to know as to how that plan is unfolding, how it's being implemented. It is understandable that the plan itself has only been implemented recently. However, what plans or measures are there to ensure its impact in the future? And what measures are there to strengthen this plan in order to ensure that corruption is rooted out of the police service? Those are some of the questions that the portfolio committee can ask in this regard. I did forward this document to members, I think on Friday, Jeremy? Yeah. Most of the questions, in fact, all the questions that will be raised during the presentation are there in the document. So if members could, apart from the presentation itself, look at this particular document, which analyzes in great detail the annual report, it will be empowering. Yeah, and before we proceed, just to touch a little bit on the issues of training, which are also in the new document that I've just talked about now. There was nothing anomalous in that regard. However, the department previously has reported on the training and development given to station commissioners. For instance, in 2007-08, it was reported that 900 station commissioners and commanders were trained in negotiation and conflict management skills through the station management learning program. However, during the period under review, which is 2008-09, it does not appear whether or not there was such training for station commanders. And the committee previously has emphasized that such training is important in order to ensure the smooth running of the police stations at local level. So it will be interesting to know as to, was there management training given specifically to station commissioners in this particular year, or what happened? here we're looking at, now we've moved to visible policing program 2, which is the crux of our presentation today. We begin by looking at the number of arrests that occurred during 2008-09 compared to the previous financial year. And you can see a decrease of -4% there. And you also look at the firearms that were recovered. And there's an increase in the number of firearms that were recovered compared to the previous financial year. But it will be important to ask that a few questions in this regard, particularly with regard to the firearms that were recovered. We do know that in most cash and transit heists, robbers use the assault rifle, R5 assault rifle, and the main custodian of that rifle is SAPS in South Africa. While, on the other hand, the Defense Department uses the R4 assault rifle. Now, it's not many R4 rifles that are found in most scenes, in most crime scenes. It's the assault rifle R5, which is owned by SAPS. So, on that note, as I've said, it will be important to ask as to how many rifles were lost, how many assault rifles, R5 rifles, were lost by the SAPS in 2008-09, and how many service pistols, as opposed to rifles, service pistols or handguns, were lost in that particular year. And how many firearms, both pistols and rifles, that belonged to the SAPS were recovered. So if 13,675 firearms were recovered, how many of those belong to the SAPS? That is the question. And also, it would be interesting to know so how many of the recovered firearms were actually used or linked to the commission of crimes. Here we have sector policing as well, its implementation decreasing from the previous 78% to 76%.
At what point can we ask questions of clarity? Afterwards?
The implementation of sector policy, the department has mainly focused on the 169 police stations. So the report that it gives look only at the 169 high contact crime police stations. So the 76% decrease, the 2% decrease, negative 2% decrease compared to the, when you're comparing the figure or the percentage of 2007-08 and 2008-09, it's only focusing on the 169 police high contact crime station. It will be interesting to know as to what led to this decrease, because previously we know that the president, including the previous Minister of Safety and Security, continuously emphasized the importance of sector policing. We were being told now and again that sector policing is one of the main strategies towards the fight against crime. So if you see its implementation decreasing instead of increasing, that is a little bit worrying. And then the department, the portfolio committee will have to engage the department in that regard. Firstly, to find out whether sector policing is still viewed by the department as a viable crime fighting strategy, or perhaps there's a shift somewhere. The number of CPFs seems to decrease from 1,111 to 1,109. As I said earlier, the department has been implementing sector policy without a policy since 2002. However, it promised Parliament that it would have an implementation policy ready by September this year. So one of the questions would be, has the department completed the sector policy? And are there sufficient resources to fully implement sector policy? Because we hear that sector policy is implemented, can be implemented fully on a 24-hour basis. Meaning that it could happen that at some police station, it can be implemented, but not on a 24-hour basis, meaning therefore that it is not fully implemented. When it's fully implemented, it will be on a 24-hour basis. In areas where sector policing is fully implemented, it is functioning optimally. The department also still views sector policing as a viable strategy, as I've said. And when will there be a complete implementation of sector policing in all 169 high contact crime stations? There are also social crime prevention measures that the department embarks upon. We can mention things like 16 days of activism against youth, women and children, and the like. There are many of those initiatives that the department engages on. And also we have the so-called victim support facilities that come as a requirement of the victim charter for every police station to have one of those. And we've seen the increase of these facilities steadily over the past financial years. And in the previous, or in 2007-08, it was at 221. And during the period under review, it increased to 795. There you can see, next to reservists, that I put a question mark. Basically, we know that the issue of the reservists, or the recruitment of reservists, was put under a moratorium pending the outcome of the review that was instructed or instituted by the Minister of Police. Now, has the review been completed? The department needs to let Parliament know about that. If not, why has it not been completed, and when will it be finalized, and the moratorium on the recruitment of reservists be lifted? So those are some of the questions that can be asked. Now, we're looking at the escapes, the attacks on police, as well as the killing of police officials. You can see that the attacks increased compared to the killings. There were 229 attacks in 2008-09 compared to 554 that took place in the preceding financial year. Here, the number of attacks on police officials seems to decrease. The number of attacks on police officials seem to increase. And it seems that movement has occurred while police officials were on duty to effect the arrest. But the explanation given by the SAPS in the report, in the 2008-09 annual report, is that the increase in attacks on SAPS members can be attributed to the fact that more police members were deployed to do crime prevention. In my opinion, indeed, crime prevention is one of the main functions of the police. But it should not be stated as if when they perform such duties, they are acting outside their mandate. What I think should be emphasized here is our measures to ensure police safety, such as the street survival and tactical training, to be rolled out to all members of the police service, particularly those who are performing crime prevention duties, so that when they perform these duties, they we can have confidence that they can defend themselves and the communities. So, the department can be asked as to what measures are there to enhance police safety, and do these measures work? Now, going back just a little bit, we're looking at the escapes from police custody. Those increased from 790 up to 719 2008-09, compared to the previous figure that was 664 in 2007-08. Again, in my opinion, there should be zero escapes. However, we found that during the budget presentation this year, the department had planned or budgeted for 700 escapes to occur between in the current financial year, which is 2009 and 2010. And there may be eventualities that may lead to escapes. And when people are detained, obviously the only thing they think about is to go back to freedom outside. So attempts to escape will always be there. However, in my opinion, there should be zero escapes. So escapes from detention are not acceptable. However, it is clear that every year there are more than 700 escapes. And during the period under review, the number of escapes increased radically. What can and is being done to stop escapes from custody? What measures are there to ensure that escapes are reduced to the lowest possible number, if not completely terminated? And also, importantly, how many SAPS members have been charged with assisting detainees to escape? Briefly, we look at borderline security. The department in this regard did not report much. They only informed us that they procured more equipment for land, water, and air, borderline security. However, in terms of personnel, strength, and numbers, they did not report. So it's not clear whether they have sufficient personnel currently or they still need more, and if more, by how many. Now, let's turn our focus to the table there, looking at the crimes dependent on police action. There are three crime categories here: illegal possession of firearms, and ammunition, drug-related crime, and driving under the influence of alcohol or other substances or drugs. These crimes showed an increase during the period under review. And it is good to see such increases in these crimes because they actually tell us that the police are doing their work. They go out there and actually, you know, do what they are meant to do. They retrieve illegal firearms and ammunition. They confiscate drugs. They also apprehend drunken road users. However, it needs to be stated that the increase in these crimes may mean that the cops are actually working, as I've said, which is commendable. However, whilst there is praiseworthy, it needs to be acknowledged that the increase in these crimes also indicates an ascendance in criminal factors such as the prevalence of drugs and illegal firearms in the community. Therefore, while celebrating the increase in these crimes from the perspective that the police are doing their work, it should also be borne in mind that their increase means that communities are infested with drugs and illegal firearms, because if they were not, these crimes would not increase no matter how many roadblocks and stop and searches are conducted. So, as we say, yes, the police have worked. We see an increase in the crimes dependent on police action. On the other hand, we need to be careful while celebrating that, because it actually indicates that our communities have these criminal elements which make these numbers increase. And that, I think, the work of the Crime Intelligence Division of the SAPS will have to be employed in this regard rigorously in order to find out as to who are the suppliers of these guns that are in the communities. Because it seems that there's a constant supply of firearms to the communities. We will recall that there was a firearms amnesty, and thousands of firearms were brought to the SAPS for destruction. However, we still recover numbers of firearms, and the arrests in this regard show that there's an increase, which clearly proves that there's a supply of illegal firearms to the community, and therefore crime intelligence can be used effectively in this regard to look at that particular matter. Now, the table that you have there is just a selection of important crimes that the department reported on. And we can see the decreases in murder, attempted murder, assault, GBH, and common assault. However, there was an increase of sexual offenses. Again, I did a separate paper analyzing the crime statistics, and I believe members do have that particular paper. Because if one has read that one, it will be easier to understand the analysis behind these figures. Of vital importance is the increase in the trio crimes. The trio crimes being robbery at residential premises, robbery at business premises, and carjacking. We see that there's 41.1% increase of robbery at business premises. However, at some point, it was indicated that the increase in business premises was not affecting mainly the formal sector. It mainly affected your informal sector, such as the spaza shops. However, when you break down that 41%, looking at it closely, zooming on it, you see that the robberies that were committed in the informal sector, the spaza shops, were only 16% of the total, and therefore the rest occurred in the formal sector. Therefore, what I'm trying to say here, the explanation that was given, trying to analyze that 41%, contradicts what appears in the annual report, where the annual report says 16% of those only occurred in the spaza shops, and more than 80% or so occurred in the formal sector. Now, since this is a plague affecting our country mainly, these trio crimes that we are talking about, it will be important to ask the department as to what does the SAPS plan to do about the increases in the trio crimes and sexual offenses, of course. What action will the SAPS take to ensure that crime statistics are not manipulated by police stations? And what measures will be put in place at local police station level to monitor that and ensure that crime statistics are not being manipulated? When looking at crimes against children under 18 years, or crimes against women and children, we'll first begin by looking at crimes against children, then we'll look at crimes against women 18 years and above. According to the SAPS, it was discovered that in the previous annual report, the age of 18 and younger for children included victims aged 18 years plus 364 days. And it says here, on day 365, such a person turns 19. As a result, Crime Information Management took the view that a child could actually be taken as meaning up to the 18th birthday of a person. That is 17 years, 364 days. Based on this new definition of a child, the figures for children decreased and those for women increased. I want to believe that members of parliament do understand this explanation. But also, it will be important to know the reasoning behind the change that led to the new definition of a child. One will be interested to know as whether the approach that was taken by the department is in line with other departments that are within the JCPS cluster. Because that's one of the reasons that the department may give, that we changed the generally accepted definition to this particular one, because every other department within the cluster, the JCPS cluster, is using this particular definition, and therefore we did not want to go it alone. And basically, how did the SAPS formulate this definition? And also whether this definition is in line with the existing legislation, such as the Child Care Act of 1983, the Children's Act of 2005, the Child Justice Act of 2008. Because when you look at these pieces of legislation, you may find that even there, the child is not as defined the way it appears they chose to define it. And also the other departments within the cluster do not define the child the way the department has done. However, let us look now at the impact of this new definition in the statistics and the figures for crimes against women and children. There you can see the dark shaded column of 2008. The 2008A and 2008B. 2008A is before the definition, and 2008B are the figures that came as a result of the new definition, which in many cases, as you can see in the table, resulted in a decrease. And the difference, the other column next to the dark shaded column showed the difference in terms of raw figures and in percentages. And then the far outer lying column shows the figures for 2008-09. So the department has compared 2008-09 with column 2008-07B instead of 07-08A. Had it compared 08-09 with 07-08A, the figures would have been different. Furthermore, now crimes against women 18 years and older, more or less the same thing happened, and those are the figures there. There's just a slight glitch that I'd like to acknowledge, and it is on the previous slide, the previous table, if you may go back there. The difference on attempted murder for children, it's 42.7%. It's negative 4.2. It's negative, as it is shown there. It's correctly shown in the slide over there. Also, when we proceed to the following table, the last two rows, column common assault and assault GBH, the raw figures there are not negative because they actually increased by that amount, resulting from the definition. In the actual handout, it appears as negative, but in the slide I've corrected it. Nadia, do you see it? Yeah, I'm saying in the actual handout, it appears as negative. It's not meant to be negative. No, those are just two issues only, and the rest goes out smoothly. Now, we're zooming in on the sexual offenses. The Sexual Offenses Act in my layman's understanding of the Act is that sexual offenses can now be committed against both men and women. And when it's reported, it's not only focused on women, but on everyone, including children. However, this table tries to separate. And you can see the differences that for 2008-09, if you look at the figures that the department has given, and resulting from the definition that they've given for the child, you can see that in 2007-08, there were 22,124 sexual offenses that committed against children. And in the following year, it was 20,141. For women, 18 years, it is the figure that for children under 18 includes both girls and boys and girls. And then the row that looks at women 18 years and older, it only focuses on women. Men are not there. However, the total, as you can see there, the actual raw figure, it is supposed to be 71,500 for 2008-09, as it is shown in the annual report. However, there's a shortfall of 21,000 cases. Now, one can only assume that if you include boys and girls and women, therefore, the rest were men. Older men, adult males, who were possibly sexually assaulted. Because that's the only logical explanation that one can come up with when looking at that. Otherwise, the department will have to be engaged in this regard and explain further as to how to arrive at such figures. Because at some point, I thought maybe my analysis was, somehow, below par here. But then I engaged my, my supervisor, Nadia Doli, to assist me. We looked at it over and over again, and it baffled us. Perhaps, yes, the cases of sexual offenses arise in South Africa to the extent that we have up to 21,000 males who are being sexually assaulted and reporting on top of that, because we know from studies previously that men do not usually report such incidences. However, here we have. Now, let's turn our attention to Program 3 and the Detective Services. This is just a highlight of a few issues within this program. We're looking at program performance. Excuse me. most targets were achieved. However, the level of achievement was not as high as that of the previous financial year. The conviction rate it was achieved, only the detection rate that was not achieved. So the target that the department had set itself is that of all the reported crimes, they will detect about half of those in that financial year. And of the target that they had set for themselves, of that half, they could not meet that, meaning that almost half of the cases that were reported were actually not successfully detected. You can see down at the bottom the Criminal Record Center and the Forensic Science Laboratory, which are important components of the department, particularly when it comes to the DNA bill that the committee is also busy with. You can see that the department, the CRC, Criminal Record Center, set itself a target of analyzing 85% of completing analysis of within 85% of analysis within 30 days. And that target was not met as well. So although most targets were achieved in 2008-09, the level of achievement in most cases was below that of 2007-08. The department needs to explain why was there less satisfactory achievement of targets compared to the previous financial year. And when you look at contact crimes, the detection rate there also decreased. But also, when you look at conviction rate, it will be interesting to know as to what is it that is included in the conviction rate. For instance, does the department include admission of guilt in determining the conviction rate? And also for crimes, minor crimes, such as drinking or urinating in public, if you pay admission of guilt in that regard, does that count as, or does that influence the conviction rate of the department? Briefly on organized crime, the department did not report much in this regard. However, we were able to extrapolate just the overall number of arrests compared to the overall number of convictions that have happened over the years, spanning from 2006-07 to the period under review. And the table there reflects those. Can just go back a little bit to that slide. Yes, Criminal Record Center. We indicated that they did not achieve their targets. And one of the reasons that was stated for not achieving the target was that the processing capability of the ACES system was not up to scratch. Hence, they could not achieve the target. Now, it will be important to know as to what steps has the department taken to enhance the processing capability of the AT system so that when there is no load shedding, and then the 85% can be achieved. Because previously, it was said that they could not achieve the target because of load shedding. That was 2007-08. Now, it's no longer load shedding. It is the processing system or capability of the AC system. Now, if all things being equal, there's no load shedding, and the processing capability is optimal, will they achieve the target? The other thing here, given that the Forensic Science Laboratory, which is a sister sub-program of the CRC, gives itself 35 days to analyze cases. It is a 30-day period for the CRC to analyze cases, their realistic targets. Perhaps, I'm not sure what informed the 30 days or the 35 days, but the department can come and explain as to why the sister unit, which is within the same building, has set itself 35 days to analyze its request, while the other one set itself 30 days, which is failing to meet. Can they just set the target on par? But I'm not the one to make that call. The department can explain as to why that is like that. We are now drawing close towards the end of the presentation. Though the department did not receive a qualification, the AG did raise matters of concern, particularly around the issues relating to the reporting of performance. It was raised that the department's information systems were not appropriate to facilitate the preparation of a performance report that is accurate and complete. Also, there were no adequate control processes and procedures designed and implemented to ensure the accuracy and completeness of reported performance information. Those were the findings of the Auditor General. Now, this may sound a bit complex, but it is important to know whether the department does understand these findings and the measures that they will take to correct what has been found. And that's the end. The deeper analysis of the financial performance and expenditure of the department, I will expect that my colleagues from the Treasury will engage on that part. But my focus mainly was on the performance, the overall performance of the department, which I endeavored to present. Honorable Chair, Members of Parliament, thanks for now.
Thank you very much, Ms. Tempis, our research. We will now take questions. Let me indicate that we're not doing that well in terms of time. But let us take questions and we're going to respond. Let me remind members that we can only ask questions that are based on this presentation, but he definitely is not the department. So there will be questions that will be directed to the department, but clarity seeking questions on this presentation, yes, we'll take them. Can we therefore allow members to ask questions? And Honorable Annelies van Wyk, Honorable Stefa, those two, or Honorable Reverend Mitre. In that order, you can ask.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, mine is questions of clarity, as you quite rightly say. I mean, the questions of detail will ask the department. I would like to know from the researcher on what has he based the deduction that the majority of police officers were killed while they're on duty, because that question could never have been answered to us before. I mean, that's an assumption that we have. So I just want to know where he deducted that from. Because it's also true that a huge number of police officers are actually killed while they're off duty in Shabins and in the normal daily lives, become victims of criminals like all of us would at some point in time. The other issue of that I just wanted clarity on is the 76% deduction in sector policing. Am I understanding you correctly that you are saying that there's been a deduction from the you are basing this deduction on the priority police stations? Okay. And then I just think that another issue that I'm not sure that I understand correctly, if I understood the comments from the department with the release of the crime statistics, they didn't say that that the majority of business robberies are with informal business. They said smaller and informal business. So I think we must be careful to say that, you know, that 16% is only is spaza shop. I think they were very clear in stating that it was the smaller businesses. So it could also be your person who have a shop at on the corner of the street who doesn't have the capacity to put in cameras or security, etc. If I remember it correctly, I just wanted to get clarity on that, Jefferson, because I think otherwise we're going to mislead ourselves in this process. The detective services, that's the last question that I've got. I just two issues. The one is that you're talking specifically here about the contact crimes, if I understand it correctly. The table that you've got here is contact crimes, refers to contact crimes. Is it an overall performance? But okay. But then I also have a problem because I remember that they, in fact, the previous performance of 2007-08 on charges to court was actually 41% and not 34%. So the it's far less that they were successful taking to court this year than they were the previous year. And also in terms of the detection rates. And they were definitely, I can recall that there were figures given. I unfortunately don't have my annual report with me, Jefferson. I came so late regarding the traffic that I came here straight and not to my office. The conviction rate also worries me. There was a conviction rate stated last year. It wasn't not stated. It was definitely stated. Yeah, actually both of them, because one will have to look at both of them to make that comparison, Chairperson. Because last year there definitely was a conviction rate given to us. It definitely was not stated. It was there, I remember it. I unfortunately, as I said, I don't have that report with me, but it was definitely there. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was more or less the same. It was also more or less 19%, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just, maybe the researchers should just check on those issues for us and give us, if necessary, a new handout on that issue so that we don't go into the meeting with the wrong information. Please, Jefferson, thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if the researcher will be able to answer, especially if he's not listening. I just want to, just on the issue of the borderline security, I mean, the fact that they don't actually give us information, to what extent can we demand that information and what regulates what they actually have to cover in the annual report? Because, I mean, how can they just not give us figures?
I just want to make sure that I heard him correctly about most guns that were used in cash and transit. Did he say they were the R5s that were owned by the police? Did I hear you correctly?
Assault rifles.
Yeah, assault rifles. I just want to make sure that I heard him correctly because it would be shocking if it is not the AK-47, but rifles that are owned by the police. And my second question on organized crime, that schedule of organized crime. Overall number of arrests is 4,873, but the convictions are higher than the arrests. Is that a misprint, or how is that possible? How can your convictions be more than the arrests? Can you be convicted before you're arrested?
Yeah,
could just go back to what Honourable Foundation is raising.
The conviction rates, as laid out previously, were far more detailed than we seem to be given now. Because I definitely remember there was a conviction rate of only 14% for violent contact crimes. And, you know, one looks for the figures in the annual report now, and it seems they're being conflated, and you don't know where they're achieving and where they're not achieving, because it's just, it was just, I don't know why the change. Why the change from the previous year in the layout? When you, it makes you unable to compare apples with apples. So I found that quite disturbing in the report. It was done in a number of cases through the report.
Just one question on this slide here, Madam Chair. Is it possible
2008, 2014. 2008, 2009, it comes to 7,000. But also the conviction. 2007, 910, that is out of 1,000. Then in this other one, 7,000, they convicted father. I mean, the number is five times. But the conviction is still less. Did you get the figures correctly? I just want to make sure. We don't ask, because it seems to be a very big discrepancy between 2007, 2008, and 2009. Are you saying the arrest jumped from 1,000 to 7,000? It means they cleaned up.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. I've got only two questions. One is reservists. I think I had there was a question that I posed to the minister, and the minister is giving me the figures, which I can produce tomorrow or whatever, which I have it. But it seems as if the researcher or maybe the report doesn't have the figures. But there are figures somewhere, somehow. And there is these figures of reservists tie up with people who are preparing for 2010 and so on. Therefore, it's very important that we know who has been recruited and how many of them. That's the first one. The second one is the victim support facilities, Chairperson. It seems as if, according to the researcher, it just grew up. You see, my problem, or maybe the question that I want to ask, is that where do you get this? Because in some of the police stations, is there any possibility of defining the police stations at where you get these victim support facilities? Because in other areas, you don't find those there. It will be possible to know. Oh, what kind of police station where you find them, because they are not available in all police stations. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
That was the last question. But can I also ask just one question? In the understanding that our crime is violent, and indeed we have seen increase in house robbery, business robbery, carjacking, but we are also seeing some decrease, small as it is, in murder, attempted murder, and so on. What could be the reasons in your own research? You know, if you go to my area at home, they will say it's because if you report that people have broken into your house but they did not rape or kill you, that case will not be followed up. And probably the criminals will therefore think that if you do that, will not be arrested. In your own research work as researchers, what do you think are the reasons for that? Violent crime, but we're seeing this increase, sharp increase, and some decrease despite. What could be the reasons?
Thanks, Jefferson.
Jefferson, living person complaining, the oral member complaining about poison, according to him.
He believes he's in a mortuary.
He believes that he's in a mortuary. I don't know why.
I think it's cold, yeah.
She's inviting back home where it's warm.
You can respond.
Thanks, Jefferson. The first question sought clarity on the explanation that most police officials are killed whilst on duty as opposed to when they're off duty. Well, that explanation is in the annual report itself. And, what is this?
Because, Honorable PC, or I think where you think you don't have answer readily available, you rather prepare the answer and bring it later, because it will take us long if you go to your books now and try to come up with answers. It definitely won't assist.
Chief, sorry. Sorry, Chief. If I may...
Right. You see, that's why I asked this question. In fact, on page 92 of the report, of the annual report, it says that most police officers were attacked on duty but killed off duty. That's what it says. Killed off duty. Now, in the past, the police, when they presented these figures to us, said that the police officer is 24 hours on duty, which technically is correct, but the police officer, even though technically they're 24 hours on duty, I think in order for police to start addressing the issue of police killings, they need to start getting the truth. They need to get to the truth. Is the person really on duty when he gets killed? Or is he being killed as a result of normal day-to-day activities as a citizen, where he's a victim of a crime? So I just think, you know, we need to correct that thing as well. And as I said, it's not, the issue for me is not the fact that police officers are killed. The issue is, if we want to address police officers getting killed while on duty, then we need to know when, you know, what percentage of them are actually killed on duty and what percentage of them are killed because they are citizens of this country and not because they are police officers.
Thanks, Chair. And you also said, Jefferson, you said I can try to come up with the explanation at a later stage, or I may just say I don't know, which will be honest. Honorable Van Wyk, you also raised something around the shelter policy, whether it only focuses on the 169 police stations. The report does say that it only focuses on the 169 police stations. The charges to court. Yeah. These focus on conduct crimes. And I will look at the issue of what do you call this, conviction rate, and bring it to the committee. And the borderline security, Honorable Shepherd, could remind me your question on that. Of course, I'll find out, but I want to assume that the annual report at some level is governed by legislation, and there is a level of obligation on the department to report truthfully. So, yeah, I will
It's just that given the fact that they haven't actually given us proper information, I mean, how can we do something about that other than asking them, which we will do? But surely they are supposed in the annual report to disclose certain information. Or can we take any steps against them in terms of legislation for not having done this?
What I highlighted in my presentation was that they mainly focused on reporting on the procured equipment and neglected to express on the number of personnel that they have, whether they still need more or they have enough personnel at the borders. But I'm not sure whether they were holding information back on that in that regard, but what is apparent to me is that they did not say much about the numbers, the number of personnel that they have. And my comment was that the committee will have to ask them as to whether they have enough personnel now or they still need more, and if more, how many. The assault rifles, R5. Of course, various rifles and firearms are used, but there's been more emphasis on the use of R5 assault rifles. And that triggered my curiosity as to how many of these rifles were there when they were lost by SAPS in that particular financial year. Because in my understanding, the SAPS is the main custodian of the assault rifle, R5, as opposed to other rifles such as the R4, which is used in defense. Thank you, Chairperson. The figures on organized crime, as perplexing as they seem, I retrieved them from the annual report, including the previous one. But as a safety measure, I will just go back and relook at them and ensure that they actually say what is presented here or they present otherwise. The reservists, of course, the annual report does mention the number of reservists that it had during the period under review. However, my comment in this regard was that since we were told that there was a moratorium on the recruitment of reservists pending the outcome of the review that was instituted by the minister, how far has the process gone? Is the review been completed? What are the outcomes of the review? And when will the moratorium be lifted and then begin to see the recruitment of reservists going forward? But they did mention, and if I can just quickly try to find this part. Yeah, here it is. In the analysis that I prepared for the committee, it's on page 9 under subheading reservists. The department had 53,200 reservists during the period under review, compared to 30,255 reservists in 2007-08. And then I continue to say, however, the recruitment of reservists was placed under moratorium in March 2009 following instruction from the Minister of Police in order to allow for a review of the legislation and regulatory framework governing the reservists. The victim-friendly, victim support centers. I think the department is the better place to respond to this one as to where do we find these facilities and in which police stations you can find such facilities. But the department has been continuously reporting that there is a steady increase in the number of these facilities in various police stations throughout the country. Honorable Chairperson, you asked a question.
Would you please repeat? Oh, okay. Thank you.
We will definitely break for tea. When we come back from tea, we're going to take presentations from the National Treasury as well as from Mr. Rendan from National Treasury as well as Ms. Peterson from National Treasury. Then we'll ask questions. So they will make presentations one after the other. Then we'll take questions after that. So let us then for now break for tea. It is just a 10 minutes tea. Okay, and also you'll be followed by Ms. Peterson from Treasury, and then we'll take questions. You are most welcome, and we really appreciate your presence here. We will therefore hand over to you to make your presentation.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks, honorable members. My name is Rendan Randera from the Public Finance Division of the National Treasury. My presentation is structured as follows. I will start with the introduction, then proceed with sub-strategic priorities, analysis of the crime situation, which was dealt intensively with by the last speaker. Then I'll also focus on program performance, expenditure analysis, audit outcomes, and then assessment of the occurrence of audit findings from 0607 to 0809, and then deal with issues of concern, and then I'll conclude my presentation. By way of introduction, the annual report measures or check both financial and non-financial performance against targets. And the benefits of annual report analysis include identifying trends in performance, as highlighted by the previous presenter, and then track the progress of performance relative to the strategic plan, and determining the financial position and financial performance of a particular institution on a given date, and identify if there's any progress on issues or concerns raised in the previous reports. The object of policing requires SAPs, and this is from the Constitution, to prevent crime, combat crime, investigate crime, maintain public order, protect and secure the inhabitants and their property, and to uphold and enforce the law. Starting with the analysis of the crime situation in South Africa, this was facilitated by grouping the 20 serious crime tendencies into the following broad categories, as in the annual report: contact crimes, contact-related crime, property-related crime, other serious crimes, and lastly, crimes heavily dependent on the police action for detection. Looking at contact crimes, you will remember that there was a decision taken that these crimes need to be reduced by 7 to 10%. I think this was from 2002-2003, somewhere there. And when we look at the 2007-08 and 08-09, when we compare, we find that only five of the seven categories of contact crime decreased during the 2008-09 financial year. So this was presented by the last speaker in a tabular form. So this is another way of presenting it. One other thing is, I think the next slide will be dealing with robbery with aggravating circumstances. The question here becomes as to whether SAPS members, the people who actually record these crimes when reported by victims, do we have a common understanding of these crimes? I mean, in there we have got assault with intent to inflict grievous bodily harm. And again, next to it we've got common assault. Do we have common understanding of these types of crimes? potentially people recording these crimes. Because this could be an explanation why the, in certain years there are big jumps because of understanding of these different types of crimes. Then we move, we try to thresh out aggravated robberies, which is street robberies, robberies at residential premises, carjacking, robberies at business premises, truck hijacking, cash in transit robbery, and bank robbery. In there, there are figures that I've circled in red. Those are huge or significant increases. So it means that if you own a house or if you own a car, the chances that one day you'll be a victim, it's increasing. I mean, is this acceptable? And then I'll move on to property-related crimes. In there are also increases. And as the annual report, it's reported that most of these crimes happens in the absence of the victims. So I won't dwell much on this because this was dealt with in detail by the previous speaker. And then we come to crimes heavily dependent on police action for detection. In there, we see a general increase amongst all the crime categories. Illegal possession of firearm and ammunition, an increase of 4.2%. Drug-related crimes, an increase. Driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs, an increase. It's good or bad in the sense that possibly it shows that police activity is increasing and then they are able to detect these crimes. Or maybe now, maybe in our communities we've got a lot of illegal firearms or drugs in our communities. Then other serious crimes, in terms of the comparison, if we look at commercial crimes, an increase of 18.7%, shoplifting, an increase of 20.6%. Commercial crime is difficult to get reliable data because most of the organizations, they themselves, depend to deal with these crimes internally rather than expose the business to the public to say that things are not well in our organization. Then coming to program performance, I will only deal with visible policing and detective services. With visible policing, we found an improvement in performance relative to previous year's performance, which is 0708. Thanks. With regard to recovery of firearms and recovery of stolen vehicles, but the difference between the target and the actual with recovery of stolen vehicles is it's marginal. And again, if we tie it up with the last slide that I presented, where in terms of property-related crimes, I said that it means that people are not safe in their houses, in their cars. Then we come to program performance detective services. In here is per crime category, contact crime, contact-related crime, and property-related crime, crime heavily dependent on police action and other serious crimes. Looking at detection rate and cases referred to court and conviction rate. This is worrying. With the exception of crimes heavily dependent on police action for detection, the percentage is quite high. But with the rest of crimes, it means that looking at the detection rate, it means that you can go and murder and rape and all do all sorts of crimes. The chances that you will be detected very low, less than half. It's, for contact crime, it's 52%. Then the rest is below. And then if you are detected, the chances that your case will be referred to court is declining. And again, if we proceed, the chances that you'll be convicted ranges between 23% and 46%. I mean, without even if you compare with 2007 or 8, it's almost a similar picture. But you look at the crimes heavily dependent on police action. The detection rate is 97%. Cases that get referred to court, 96%. And the conviction rate is 46%. A huge decline. This is puzzling because, I mean, you catch the guy right-handed with drugs. Why then do we have a conviction rate of 46%? It's not in the 90s compared to the detection and cases referred to court. And again, coming to the conviction rate, because the conviction rate, this is the SAPS conviction rate definition that they are using. If we apply the NPA or justice conviction rate, meaning that it's going to be much lower, because there are differences in terms of the definition. In one of the slides, I'm still going to elaborate more on the conviction rate. That's performance with regard to detection services. Even without comparing, with last year, like I think with contact crime, the target was 52 or 53. But as a country, are we comfortable with this low rate, even without comparing with their target set? I mean, the message that we're sending out there to the criminals. It means that they know that the target is 52%, and they won't be caught. Then I will also move on to expenditure analysis. Money is appropriated per program. Overall, SAPS, they spend the total budget, 100%. And then if we focus per the expenditure levels per program, there is a column there headed environment. That's shifting of funds between programs. And if you look at visible policy, which is their core business, money was shifted away from visible policy to administration. And again, money was shifted from crime intelligence as well as protection and security services to administration and detective services, meaning that the two beneficiaries for those shifts, administration and detective services. Part of the problem could be because some of these functions within SAPS are centralized. But then the question becomes, what is it that they sacrificed under those programs? And they ended up releasing funds to administration programs. So these are some of the explanations that maybe can be obtained from the department. What the money was used for. And again, what is it that was sacrificed by the department? Then... it's still the same information, but in this case, it's per economic classification, which is mainly current payments, transfers and subsidies, and payment for capital assets. And again, a lot of shifts were from current payments to payments for capital assets. And one of the reasons could be as a result of vacancies, as indicated. Then there were some savings there, and the money was shifted to buildings and other fixed structures, machinery and equipment, vehicles, firearms, and stuff like that. And under machinery and equipment, what I know is that in 08-09, vehicles were purchased for the Hawks. I think 120 vehicles, they were purchased for the Hawks. The police never wanted to take over the contract that NPA had with a service provider because it was irregular. They said you can deal with that contract. They never wanted to adopt that contract, which was irregular. So they decided to buy vehicles and to reprioritize within their budget to accommodate for the new unit, the DPCI. Then coming to drawings versus actual expenditure on a monthly basis, because before the start of any financial year, any department provides treasury with their drawings, like their projection on a monthly basis. and again we take that and compare with the actual. When we look at the police, they stick to their plan. Unlike with us, other departments where you'll find some huge deviations between the projections and the actuals. And again, coming to the March, where we'll hear of physical dumping, March spikes, where in March expenditure starts ballooning or shooting up. So with subs, they are still on track. This was the 08-09. Then coming to audit outcomes, I think our colleagues from the AG office will elaborate more on this. They are not qualified, but they are a matter of emphasis. Being non-compliant with regulatory requirements. Just briefly, I think the problem which was identified in this case was that the performance information was not reliable, not consistent, not relevant. I mean, the performance indicators that we see, what do they mean to an ordinary person in the streets? They were not measurable. These were some of the matters identified. I'll give you an example. Especially with the recording of these statistics, I raised a question as to whether is there a common understanding of these categories of crime? Common assault, assault with intent to inflict grievous bodily harm. I mean, do we have common understanding? Or the people recording these statistics, do we have a common understanding? It also happens in other sectors, if I have to share with this committee, like, for instance, with land assets, for instance, when you begin to ask how many beneficiaries are benefiting from these grants. One province will tell you 20 beneficiaries, meaning the actual people who got the grant. Others will give you thousands and thousands, whereas in there they are also counting members of the family. You see, there's not that common understanding of some of these things. I'll move on to this to the next slide. I've highlighted this has got something to do with the relevance, reliability, consistency. These are some of the things that the police needs to deal with when we look at their statistics. I think the committee should pay attention to the emphasis of matter and explore any remedial steps with the accounting officer, so that come next year, we don't find similar questions or concerns raised by the AG. In here, I'm trying to check as to whether issues which were raised previously, like in 06-07 up until 08-09, as to whether do they recur. Because if we only focus on, for instance, on issues which were raised this year, issues regarding performance, we'll find that there will be some issues maybe raised in 06-07, and they happen again. Like, for instance, there was an issue which was raised in 06-07, supply chain management, non-compliance and inconsistencies relating to use of agent and emergency procedures, advertising and evaluation of bids, certain prescribed documentation not available. That issue was raised in 06-07 annual report. Up until now, it hasn't occurred again. So we need to be able to track even some of the issues which were raised. And again, for the issues raised last year, the department needs to be able to tell as to what is it that they are doing to make sure that they address the concerns raised by the AG. Then coming to issues of concern, if you look in the annual report, there is an increasing frequency of the condonement of irregular expenditure by the accounting office of the Department of Police. So I think the presentation which was made last week by the AG, there was 36% of the department that didn't disclose the irregular expenditures, including provincial departments, that didn't disclose the irregular expenditures. But subs in this case, they have disclosed irregular expenditure. But the problem here is that this appears to be increasing. because the occurrence means a non-compliance with certain laws or regulation or their own policies. So, and again, it exposes the state to risks of fraud if not dealt with. So what is it that they are doing in terms of making sure that there won't be a condonement, there won't be occurrence of these irregular expenditures, because they condone them just because something has happened or somebody has contravened certain legislation or policies of their own. Then I will also focus on this thing of a conviction rate. You will find that there are two definitions of conviction rate, one for the police and one for the NPA. So that's why in one of the slides I said if we consider the NPA definition, the conviction rate as presented by the police is going to be much lower, because the definition used by the NPA, it only deals with guilty or not guilty. Whereas the one for the police, it's the guilty ones plus cases dealt with through other means, diversions, withdrawals. They take those into account. So, I mean, we can't boast to have an integrated justice system if we've got a different definition of the same thing. In my view, if we've got an integrated system that works, we need to have a common definition. Yes, the nature of business differs, but I think we need to find one another in terms of these definitions. Because one will say it depends which conviction rate are you using. The last presenter presented something on children as something, any person below the age of 18 years. That's a common understanding, we know that. So, but if we continue having different definitions, one department will come with its own definition of children, e.g. any person below the age of 10. So I think we need to have a common understanding of these definitions. And in conclusion, although the audit opinion is unqualified, it is important for staff to address the issues raised as emphasis of matter. Thank you. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much. We will take the next presentation. I think the Honorable Mr. Ngulek George is saying something, but we'll understand he's an elderly person here, so yes.
That's why you called.
Good afternoon, members of parliament and chairperson. I'm Stephanie Peterson, doing the presentation on the ICD working at National Treasury Public Finance Division. My presentation will, the overview will be the introduction, the expenditure analysis of the ICD, program performance, a report of the Auditor General on the financial statements, issue of concern, and discussion. The expenditure trend for the ICD since 2006-07 up to 12-13, the baseline allocation increased from 66.2 million in 06-07 to 146.5 million in 12-13 at an average rate of 14.4%, which is mainly due to additional allocations in previous MTF years for the opening of satellite offices, the upgrading of posts for investigators, and for the strengthening of capacity and support services. Although there was a budget cut for the ICD in the 08-09 financial year of 500,000, the year-on-year growth for 08-09 was still relatively higher than inflation, which was, the growth was 22.75 for the ICB in 08-09. The expenditure analysis for 08-09 per program, the total expenditure as at year-end was 100.81%, which represents an overexpenditure of 800,000. The overexpenditure in Program 2, 1.420 million, was due to the higher-than-anticipated salary increases for SMS members in September 08 and January 09. The under-expenditure against Program 3 was due to the fact that the relocation of offices did not take place as planned, and the although the ICD did shift environment funds from one program to the other, they've already environment so that they could environment the 620,000 to program 2 because of that 8% limitation. If we have a look at the economic classification spending on 08-09, the same problem, they overspend on compensation of employees and couldn't move the 620 from goods and services because of that 8% limitation that prohibited them to shift the funds between the two programs. Performance information. The top part is the workload of the ICD that they had in 08-09. The workload was 11,193 cases, of which 6,119 was cases received during 2008, and 5,074 was cases carried over from 2007. Only 46% of cases carried over from 07, and 61.5% of new cases was completed during 2008. A total of 5,395 cases was closed in 08-09. A total of 1,935 recommendations were referred to the DPP and set for internal disciplinary procedures. On average, if you take the what the investigators against cases completed, then it was 6.5 cases per month per investigator that was finalized. The concern from National Treasury on this slide is the backlog that was carried over to 19, which was still 5,060 cases. The case intake yearly change from 05-06 to 08-09, the number of deaths in police custody shows an upward trend of 13.7% over the last 4-year period. Followed by allegations of criminal offences, which reflects 11.6% increase over the same period. DVA and misconduct cases show the decrease of 1.7% and 1% respectively. Performance information per province over the 4-year period. The case intakes increased from 5,286 cases in 05-06 to 6,119 in 08-09 at an average rate of 5%. Eastern Cape and Free State experienced increases of 14 and 16.6% respectively, and Mpumalanga and the Western Cape decreased of 6.6% and 8.3% respectively. The ICD managed to open 3 more satellite offices in 08-09. To date, they've established 6 satellite offices. The finance heads increased from 2005 in 05-06 to 217 in 08-09 at an average rate of 10%. Comparing personnel numbers is at 31st March for the previous financial year, we represented a vacancy rate of 7.6%. Measured against 248 posts. There has been some improvement. In fact, the vacancy rate is at the end of 08-09 decreased to 6.3%, with vacancy of 17 against 270 posts. Program performance, the administration program. the first one to promote employment equity by 50% women in top management. Although the target has been set for later date, equity in terms of gender has been reached on senior management level. The challenge remains on middle management level, where equity is currently 29% women. I think I will skip where the targets have been met. We can just have a look at the indicator and the target, and it was met. In most cases, the target has been met. The one that I think I should touch on is the finalized the appointment of asset holders throughout the ICD. The target was met. Holders appointed through ICD and control measures for more than 10% of identified priority risks have been addressed. I'm just concerned because I say the target has been met on asset holders issued, but they got a qualification on asset management again, but I'll touch on that later on. The workshops or the code ethics for the suppliers that render services and goods and services to the ICD target not met. A code has been developed, but the workshop in implementation of such is however problematic and will be benchmarked with other departments in 19. The rollout of the health and wellness campaign met. The ICD security policy was not met. The policy is currently with NIA for ratification and it will be approved thereafter. The rest, the targets were met. Then program two, they must receive, register, and process complaints, investigate deaths in police action, investigate and monitor complaints of criminality and misconduct, and monitor the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act. The complaints registered within 48 hours, the target was met. Application for exemptions, target met. Investigations of death, class one, where there is no police involvement, target was not met. By reported there was a shortfall of 4% on their target. The investigation of deaths, where there is police involvement, the target was not met. They reported only 330 out of 1,568 cases finalized. Finalized internal ICD investigation of class 3 criminal offenses within 120 days, target not met, only 31% of 1,107 out of 3,581 cases finalized. Finalized internal ICD investigations of misconduct cases within 120 days, target not met, shortfall of 3% on that one. Attendance of crime scene, target exceeded by 18%. Program 3, information management and research, where the purpose is to manage all information needs and knowledge, conduct proactive research, and embark on various proactive oversight activities, and manage all communication and the marketing of activities and products to stakeholders. The most cases here, the target were met. The time taken to respond to media inquiries, 94% responded within 1 hour. The target is respond within 1 hour. 4% responded within 4 hours, and the other 2% within 8 hours. Target was exceeded in terms of community awareness activities per quarter, per province. The report of the Auditor General on their financial statements, the ICD received a qualified audit opinion on movable tangible capital assets due to the following: insufficient and inappropriate audit evidence to substantiate an adjustment of 544,000 to prior year balance. Insufficient and inappropriate audit evidence to substantiate disposals in additions, and no evidence to substantiate the opening balance of 14.927 million. internal controls, the stipulations of Section 38 of the PFMA were not complied with, which resulted to the inefficiencies in the internal control system and ultimately led to the qualified audit opinion. The reported performance information was not reliable. The accuracy and completeness of performance information for Program 2 could not be verified. This was due to re-performance of actual cases that were completed and recourses that could not be executed, as only the number of finalized cases in each province were reported with no indication of how much cases were given. This is an assessment of audit opinions since 2006, and you can see there that the internal control was a problem since 2006-07, and despite the fact that the ICD indicated that internal controls and systems have been put in place and functions and management has taken steps to rectify the weaknesses, it appears that there are still shortcomings that need to be addressed in this respect. Also, with regard to assets, which has been a qualification now for the past 3 years, and the ICD reported that measures were implemented, but it still appears that there are still shortcomings that need to be addressed on the asset management. This is a new opinion on the reported information as discussed earlier that was not reliable for Program 2. The ICD should report in measures implemented to avoid the reoccurrence of that this audit opinion. Issues of concern, the qualifications on assets, as I've mentioned before, and then the over-expenditure of 800,000, the ICD should report on what actions they implemented to avoid a recurrence. And then internal control, the internal audit committee must be more vigorous in analyzing financial management and systems in the department. The internal audit committee must submit, should submit a report to the portfolio committee on this issue. And performance information that was not reliable. In this instance also, the ICD submit case flow management model to the National Treasury quarterly. And even there, the performance information is not reliable for cases. Intake in provinces doesn't add up to what the model says. So there's not control over cases intake and cases finalized on that model. And then the published numbers on yearly intakes is also not reliable because we took the annual report since 2005 to 2008. And if you take the numbers, then it differs from year to year. If I can just show you, go back to this slide. In the 2005-06, the 2005, when we took the yearly intake per class out of the 2005-06 annual report, it showed that there was 5,277 cases. And when we took the 2006 annual report, it shows that for 2005-06 per province, there was 5,286 cases. And the previous one, 5,277. So we picked up that even published information in the annual report doesn't always correlate to previous annual reports.
Mm-hmm.
That's yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We have had the two presentations. We will now be asking questions for clarity from the two presenters, Mr. Rindani and Ms. Peterson. Can we therefore take questions if members wanted to ask clarity-seeking questions? Honorable Annelies, Honorable Milek George.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question relates to the ICD specifically. I think many of the issues that Treasury raised here, we are aware of in terms of figures not correlating from one year to the other. That's been an ongoing problem. But I want to refer specifically to the IT, the what do they call themselves, information management and research, the reports. It's a problem that we don't see those reports, even though we've requested those reports in the past as well. And we requested them because of the fact that we believe we can also play a role in ensuring that SAPs actually implement what is comes out of the report. But for me, the concern is if they've met the requirement. But did Treasury in any way had to look at the quality of those reports? Because I think it's one thing to meet the requirement of having three reports. It's another thing whether the quality was actually sufficient or not. Because I know that that's a challenge. I mean, you would find in reports that deals with domestic violence, you would, in the middle of a report, suddenly find a sentence dealing with the rain that damaged the roof. So, you know, that's why I'm raising this issue. Because I think for us to measure whether this program is actually sufficiently performing should be more than just meeting the requirements in terms of the number of reports that they're given. And if you take in consideration that they are also playing a big role in terms of the annual report, then it raises questions in my mind, because the annual reports are not consistent and figures differ, et cetera, whether this program is actually fulfilling its duty.
Well, Madam Chair, I will not ask, but I'm just concerned about this case completed by ICD. It's well, probably they will answer, but my concern is that ICD's work should be far easier than the work of the police investigating. They're dealing with the police, everything here. But they set up a small target, but still not meet it. It is very bad. The gentleman from Treasury says this definition. Why? Is there a reason why, probably in your own, of course, we'll ask the police, but in your understanding, why they have different definitions of guilt in the same country, in the same justice class? I will talk about targets when we meet them, because I have never been happy even when I was in that justice class. The one time I was told 1,000 cars stolen, the target is to get 500. My question, why don't you target to get all the 1,000 cars and then fail if you fail? But this thing of target, so you target, you know that 1,000 cars stolen, but you are supposed to police to get all those 1,000, but you say no, target. And the explanation has never been satisfied, but that one is a question we should ask to the police. But is there any reason why, in your own understanding, they put a different definition of guilt? I mean, the same class.
Yes, Honorable.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. Mine is to Treasury, relating to their presentation. The police have this, I suppose, quite good expenditure pattern where they spend all their money. I'm not so sure whether it's good or not. They tend to spend what they've indicated that they're going to draw on a monthly basis. Now, as Treasury, are you satisfied with this? How deep do you delve into this actual expenditure? Are they actually delivering what they say they're going to deliver? I'm just wondering, as Treasury is concerned, when they report to you that they've spent every cent, do you sit back and clap your hands and say, well done, or do some alarm bells start to ring and say, hang on, is there not something else here? I also want to ask, you know, you spent a bit of time going through the crime stats And you actually had a slide here before that dealt with the detection rates, cases referred to court, conviction rates. I'm asking myself why you put that in here. Because you didn't really, you just spoke about the, you know, the conviction rate, detection rates, etc. Does that indicate a worry from your side as Treasury as to whether whether they're actually using their money effectively, whether they're actually delivering the desired results? I'd like to hear from yourself. Thanks.
Honorable A. Ndlovu, Honorable Mishwe, Honorable Bannett, in that order. Honorable Ndlovu.
Thank you, Chairperson. There are two questions. It's one from Treasurer to my brother, Mr. Randall. The development, didn't we agree that the development should be 8%, not more than that? If you agree with that, and you go to the slides of expenditure analysis, it's more than that. How come that has happened? What is the query on that? Because to me, it seems as if people do what they want or do what they like in variation, and then change things and so on and so forth. And those two departments are the beneficiaries, that is the administration and the detectives. That's the first question. The second question, the chairperson, is from the ICD. In page 6, say a total of 1,935 recommendations were referred to the DPP and SAPS for internal disciplinary procedure. I want you to educate me on this one. Which these cases are referred to them for internal disciplinary? Are the cases that they are supposed to be taken to court, or is just the internal? Because there are two things that has happened here. Other one is DPP, and the other one is internal. Now, I want you to do me a favor. Separate the DPP one so that we will know that that can be prosecuted one. And the internal one, that can be disciplined or whatever. Let me make an example. If the person who has shot somebody on Saturday has been found guilty, then that will be DPP plus internal. But this one, the number, it does not make it clear for me. Can you make it clear for me so that I will understand it? Which is the DPP one, which is the other one, which is internal, doesn't need the DPP process. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, to Ms. Peterson also about the 1,935 recommendations. Have you tried to find out how many of those recommendations have been implemented? Or is it just looking at what was referred to the police, but have you tried to find out whether the police have done anything about them and how much? And secondly, the published numbers that are not reliable, this we hear every year, the numbers are not reliable. And the performance information also is not reliable. Obviously, something needs to be done so that the figures we get are reliable. Now, do you have anything that you can recommend that should be done to ensure that the information we get from this department and the foreign police and the figures that we receive are reliable? And the last one to Mr. Rendani. Speaking about the cars that were bought by the Hawks because they did not want to use the things that were contracted to the NPA, you said the contracts were irregular.
Yeah.
Can you enlighten me? What does that really mean? They were irregular. Can you help us come to the reason of that irregularity and also a better understanding? Why were the contracts irregular? Thank you.
Honorable Ms. Kalapanat.
Thank you, Reverend Meshwe. Just pretty much asked exactly the question I wanted to know. It was a throwaway line on part of Mr. Randani about the existing contracts for vehicles that was held by the NPA, and there was this throwaway line that SAPS refused to take them over because they were irregular. Now, I'd like to know, and I certainly have not looked through the NPA annual report, but was that picked up by the AG? Are the actions being taken against that? What is the situation? Because in our extensive meetings over that entire issue, the idea was that existing contracts and equipment were going to be transferred. So I'm quite concerned to hear that there was such an issue. So please elaborate. Thank you.
Then I have a question. If there's no question on page 17, I'm not sure whether the AG will probably cover that later. I see the...
Excuse me, Chairperson. I didn't hear the last sentence of my oral member, Colonel Bernard. What's going to be transferred? I just wanted to... assets.
Okay. On page 17 of the ICT report, can you explain further maybe those statements of says insufficient, inappropriate, or data evidence to substantiate disposals of 6395 million? And the very last one, no evidence to substantiate the opening balance of 14. Can you just give us more information on that one? Responses?
Let me start with the concerns regarding the irregular contracts for the NPA. If you look at the annual report for the NPA, the accumulative figures presented in the annual report with regard to the issue of those contracts, irregular expenditure. What happens is NPA had a contract to procure certain things, and then they extended that contract to procure certain things which initially were not part of the contract, and that in itself is irregular because they didn't go out on tender. We don't know as to whether we're getting value for money. You see? So, and they have applied for the condonation of that amount which has been disclosed. So we are still in the process of finalizing that submission because a part of it starts from 2001-2002, and we're busy working together with AG Slabbert regarding those contracts for the NPA. And then when the issue of the migration of the Scorpions to the Hawks started, when they look at the monies that needs to be transferred to the police and all the contracts that the Scorpions had, it's a very complicated contract because that contract, remember, is for the whole of NPA. Former Scorpions included in that contract. And we can't begin to say, this part of this contract go to the police and this one, we leave it behind. It was a very complicated arrangement, taking into account that the Scorpions were a sub-program within NPA. And the contract was under the name NPA. Then coming to the transfer of assets, yes, the assets will be moved to the hub. And this year, during the adjustment budget, a certain amount of money is going to be transferred to the police, which will cater for salaries for those members who have migrated, also to deal with things like goods and services training and stuff, and also capital equipment, vehicles, firearms, and stuff like that. So
The issue of a contract, yes, they've disclosed it. We're working on it as to whether to condone or not to condone. And then, and when we raised the problem that we had with the irregular expenditures and the contract itself, then the NPA decided that they are going to terminate that contract with the service provider, because even the vehicles, they were leasing from that service provider. So they decided we're going to take. They've decided that they're going to take all the vehicles back to the service provider, because it's going to be irregular up until the end of that contract. And I think it expires in 2012 or 2013, somewhere there. So they've decided to terminate that contract. But they've noted it. You will also see it in 07-08 annual report, and you're still going to see it in 08-09 annual report, in the NPA annual report. I'm not sure as to whether I've adequately addressed your concerns. Okay, thanks. Coming to different definition of conviction rate, why different in definitions? In my view, especially that we've got a system that we call integrated justice system, there shouldn't be any differences in definition. The problem starts when each department considers its nature of work. Like, for instance, if I have to present the formula used by the police to calculate their conviction rate, they take the guilty ones plus cases either withdrawn or dealt through diversions, divide by all cases referred to court. Whereas the NPA, those cases which were dealt with through other means, like diversions and withdrawals, or somebody has died and they're not going to proceed with case, they are not taken into account. They only deal with those cases guilty, divided by guilty plus non-guilty. But if we've got a system, my view is that I don't see any reason why we should have different definitions, especially that we're talking of a system here. So that's my view. The nature of work is different, but I think they need to have common ground. Are we satisfied with expenditure? Does it indicate okay? We will never be satisfied. I mean, what does it mean to an ordinary person in the street to say they've spent 100%? And people, they're still being raped, killed, you know. What does it mean to an ordinary person in the street? It means nothing. It means nothing. Value for money. What is it that the money is buying? Are we reducing murder rate by 7 to 10%? As stated, no, we are not. So people, they're still being killed in their own houses. Cars are hijacked, you know. So although they're spending their money, the value for money, if we marry the money that they are spending and the outcome, we'll never be satisfied. Then coming to the slide where I presented the conviction rates and detection rates, does it indicate a worry? I'm extremely worried, because what we are saying is that people can commit all these crimes, but the chances that they will be caught or prosecuted are very low. Okay, I know I will be caught, something like 52% chance I will be caught. And I know that the chances that my case will be referred to court is very slim, something like 40% on murder. You know, 52%, 42%, that I will be convicted. Very low, 20-something%. Even without comparing between 07-08 and 08-09, absolutely, this is not satisfactory. They are very low. All of them still below 50%, with the exception of a crime heavily dependent on police action. We were supposed to be talking of 90 to 100% of detection rates, cases that get referred to court, and conviction rate. People committing these crimes, they know these statistics. They act based on these statistics. that the chances are low, even if we are caught, but that will be taken to jail seriously. If I have to elaborate, like for instance, you case the guy with drugs. The guy with drugs is being caught. So, and the chances that those cases will be referred to court, for an example, is something like 96%. But that you will be convicted is something like below 50%. So we'll never be satisfied. It's very low. I mean, in absolute terms, we're supposed to, without even comparing with their target. I mean, what is it now that we are doing? Not only the police. I mean, most of these crimes are social crimes. Between friends, husband and wife, people who know each other. What is it that we are doing to check up all these detection rates and that cases can be referred to court such that convictions can end up being high? What happened with violence? The rule is that it should not be, I think, more than 8% of that program's budget. I'm not sure as to whether my arithmetic will give me something below, but for them to move beyond, then they come for an approval. So these violence were at the end of the year. They were balancing the books. Sorry, can you just, what does it mean? In terms of, for that particular program, yes, for that particular program, then they focus on certain things. The question here should be, that's why at the last column, it only shows expenditure for that particular, for the original, as a percent of the original. So the question here should be, what is it that they sacrificed? You know, that shows a need, that they can save the money from protection services to somewhere else. What is it that they sacrificed under protection services?
Thank you, Chairperson. On that very same issue, SAPS veterans always are in visible policing, and we've had long discussions about the fact that they shouldn't because it's their core function. But my question is to Treasury. Why do Treasury keep on every year with the adjustment appropriation, give them more money for visible policing, knowing that they don't spend that money? Because that is the issue, Chair, that they take to Treasury this time of the year when we're in the adjustment appropriation. They take it to Treasury. They say we need more money for visible policing. And every single year, Treasury gives them the extra money. So while you're concerned, we can understand that, but why do you continue to give them money for that?
Just a follow up on the issue of the contract. You said that they are looking at terminating the contract, but it's valid until 2012 or 2013. What are the financial implications of terminating the contract early, and is that advisable?
Chair, I'm looking at the environments here, and as Honourable Van Baker said, I mean we've had situations where way after the fact, I mean months after the fact, this committee was told, actually, we needed to send a bunch of our people off to the Caribbean, and so we took
10 million, how much?
Millions and millions. And we said, well, where did you get it? Out of visible policing. So they all went and had a lovely holiday in the Caribbean out of visible policing. So we agreed. We said it's being used as a slush fund. And the query is, why is it being condoned? I think is a very good question.
The money that they get through the adjustment budget is for salary adjustment. The money that they get during the adjustment budget is mainly for salary adjustment. That difference between what was budgeted and, again, the difference as a result of salary negotiations. So then you find that during the process, then they've got vacancies. then there's money lying around.
No.
Let's forget it. Let's go to another. Okay. Coming to the issue of contract, the NPA, they were saying that it's like the direction is going to take. They will end up being in court with the service provider. But at the moment, they're still negotiating with the service provider. We don't know as to how they will end up being there, because they're still negotiating with the service provider. So as to whether they will end up in court, at the moment, it's still out of court. So they're still negotiating with the service provider.
Chairperson, may I differ with my colleague here next to me? I think the question that was asked by the Honourable Annelies is clear and straightforward. Why do you keep on giving them money when you know that they are not going to use it? I mean, that's a simple question. So you need to answer that question.
Let me come in. I think you answered the question, and members were not satisfied. And that's the another thing. So he answered the question. The question was asked. He responded to the question, and members were not satisfied with that response. So the question was answered, and members were not satisfied. And probably it is proper for Mr. Randall to take note of that, that members seem not agreeing with you on your response. To say for salaries, they seem to have another understanding that it's not just for salaries, for the program itself and so on and so forth. So that's the issue. And whether you can respond to that is up to you, but you did respond to the question as asked. They were not satisfied. I just wanted to say that and to make members aware of that fact.
Yeah.
There therefore may be follow-up questions to your response. But not that you did not respond to the question, you responded, they were not satisfied. There might be some follow-up questions. And I'm not very sure, before I go to members, whether you've responded to all the questions that were asked during the first round so that we can entertain fair questions. You did. Okay. Can we take Honorable Annelies, Honorable then we'll go to him.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, follow-up question on the original question. I differ that it's given for salaries, because salaries is a very specific item within in the budget. Now, if you look at the past at least 3 years, adjustment appropriation, the basis on which SAPS comes to the Treasury to request extra money is for visible policing, not salaries, visible policing. And it's two different budget items. So Chairperson, you're right. The question was answered, but it wasn't answered satisfactorily. And I think what we need to do is to raise our concern about the fact that Treasury condones this, but at the same time complain about the shifting of money. Because I think they've got to take responsibility for this as well. They've got to take responsibility. We will keep SAPS responsible for it, and we will ask them again what did they sacrifice, because we've asked them that every single year. But at some point in time, Treasury needs to put its foot down as well and say, guys, you ask for money, and you ask for visible policing, but every year you shift from visible policing to other programs. And the Honourable Quiller Barnett is quite correct. The previous year, when we asked him where did this money go, it went to take SAPS members to the Caribbean, the West Indies to be more specific, so that they could learn lessons on the security around the World Cricket Cup. Now, with all due respect, what we learned in the West Indies around an event like that, compared to the kinds of events that we've hosted in our own country for so many times before, I still fail to understand. And I think Treasury and the Auditor General Counsel's Office need to take cognizance of this concern that we have around those issues.
Honorable Craig.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'm partly covered by the Honourable from Craig. But Mr. Randella did make a statement that he was saying that the additional funds were for salary adjustments. All right. But then he went on to say, but then there were vacancies. Now it may well be that somewhere in the budget there were additional funds given for salary adjustments. But I would find it very strange that Treasury would allocate those funds and then afterwards suddenly the police then say, oh, but we've got vacancies and we can't use those funds. So I find that part of the answer but problematic to me. It doesn't make sense. Because I would imagine if funds are given for salary adjustments, surely it must be for actual people that are there.
Yep.
It can't be for vacant posts. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, and then they save savings.
Yeah.
Normally, these salary adjustments, they are made based on the compensation of employees' budget, not necessarily on the basis of a filled post. The reason being that if they don't get the salary adjustment, they can turn around to say they will not increase their numbers from currently 180-something to 200-something because there's not enough funding for it, which means that if they come during the normal budget process, we're starting afresh. And again, even if it's there are no vacant posts before the adjustment budget, but after the adjustment budget, there could be vacancies. So both before and after. Okay.
You are protected, sir. You were talking. Okay. Let's maybe allow ICD to respond, but I just want to say this, that we are indeed in the process of integrating our criminal justice system. It's not there yet. The issues that you are raising, I fully agree with. And if you check on the research that was conducted, which led to the process of the review and of the system, these are the issues that were raised. The fact that these departments, they have different missions, visions, they have different definitions, many of these things, and they don't talk to each other. Priorities do not talk to one another and so on. They therefore make the system not integrated, hence the process of review and therefore the integration of the system. And the issues that you are raising are very, very correct, but they actually talk to the system that I think we were told the government is embarking on. The question, of course, that will arise will be how far have they gone? What is the speed at which they are moving in the implementation of these reviewal, these important measures that will ensure that we have a system that talks to one another, because indeed they undermine. You know, I'm sitting here listening, and I think our research unit is picking up many things that probably will need some smaller research to say which cases are, you have 40, 90 something. Then you have 30-something. Which are these cases that are not sent to court? If they go to court, you know, there isn't conviction or whatever, they are not finalized.
which are these cases and why. Because if you were to call the justice people, they'll be saying we are delayed by the DNA results, for instance. So if you go to, I was in the correctional services, for instance. If you go to correctional services, you have, I mean prisons. You have people who've been there for 5 years waiting for trial. And if you check all of them, it will be rape, murder, whatever. But those cases, those serious cases, if you go to check to ask, they will, I mean to court to check to ask, they will be saying, we don't have these results, the investigation is not wah, wah, wah. If you go to police, they say, we're waiting for the, they call regional court to come because it comes once per year. This case is finalized now, we're waiting for it. So you have a system that is not talking to one another, but also you have other challenges. And that is why one will be interested to know as to which are these cases that take long to be finalized and what are the common reasons and are they beginning to be addressed now that we are seeing we're integrating these systems, because in the past it's not. But of course it's not only in South Africa. It's a challenge in many of the countries, some even in the first world countries, the integration of the criminal justice system. I think we have to correct that. Let me go to the ICD.
Thank you. On the questions of the three reports, the research reports, those reports don't come to the National Treasury. The ICD reported previously that they submit that report to Parliament. So I'm not aware if maybe the Portfolio Committee has seen the reports, but not been submitted to National Treasury. And on the question of the 1935 recommendations, the question was asked how many of the 1935 recommendations was implemented, how many, the split between the DPP and the FEDS. The 723 cases was referred to the DPP, and the remaining 1,212 cases was referred to SEPS. Out of the cases it was referred to the DPP, 723 cases were out of the 173 cases were recommendations in respect of deaths in custody or as a result of police action, and 550 recommendations were in respect of other criminal offences to the DPP. The remaining 1212 referred to SEPS was for to the SEPS management was for internal disciplinary proceedings. Of how many of these recommendations was implemented, I have no idea, because you know that the ICD struggles with state management to implement those recommendations. So I can't say how many of that was implemented, but I think that is a question that the committee can ask the department when they present. Then on the slide 17, the question on whether this means the amount. The amounts reflect in the financial statements of the ICD, and the auditors couldn't get an audit trail for the amounts that the department brought forward on the. If you have a look, it was now 28 of the financial statements in terms of the machinery and equipment, etc., and what. They quote amounts for disposals and additions, but there wasn't enough audit trails for the auditors so that they could verify these numbers. I think the auditors will also elaborate more on those ones. That was the question. Did I answer all the questions on ICD?
Thank you very much. I don't think that we have further questions. We are within time.